Welcome to another episode of 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. I'm Daniel Henry Price, joined by Chad Bird. Chad, how are we doing today?
Hey, I'm good. I am. I'm looking at a day of plagues. We've got several coming up here. This is going to be the podcast of plagues, at least for today.
I feel like it's going to be all plagues today.
All plagues today, but this the good news is that if all goes according to plan, we're actually going to cover all of them up to number 9. We're going to save the 10th, of course, because that's the biggest one, and we have to talk about it in connection with Passover. So there's a whole lot that we'll have to save for that. But the goal, anyway, is to work our way through the rest of them. We started them last week, so we have a couple under our belt already.
Yeah. All right. Well, we dare not delay.
All right. Well, let's jump right back into the plagues then. So, everybody, thanks for listening. As always, if you joined us last time, then you know we're in about halfway through with chapter 8 of Exodus, and we've covered, of course, the first plague is well known. It was the turning of the Nile into blood. And that lasted for 7 days, and the longest of the plagues that we know of. And then next came our beloved frogs, where the whole land was full of frogs. And I might mention something now in connection with that I don't think that I mentioned last time. I know I did mention that many of these plagues seem to be a direct slap in the face to the deities of Egypt. So the Nile was associated with one of the Egyptian deities, and here it turns to blood. So a slap in the face of the Nile god. But there was also a goddess who was connected with frogs. Frogs were seen as somehow representative of her, and she was connected with fertility. So some people speculate these frogs were kind of a slap in the face to that goddess because she was connected with fertility and childbirth. And of course, the Egyptians had been commanded by Pharaoh to throw the Israelite children into the Nile River. And we see that maybe not a very clear correspondence with all of these various plagues, but with a number of them anyway, there's a direct correlation between the plague or some aspect of the plague and one of the gods or goddesses in the Egyptian pantheon. We do know, and I mentioned this last time, we do know that these plagues were not simply God's attack against Pharaoh and the Egyptians, but this was really what the Greeks called a theomachy, which is a battle between gods. So there's a battle between Yahweh and these false gods of Egypt that are taking place, in which Yahweh is demonstrating that he is the one and the true God, and that all of these other supposed gods are nothing more than vanities. So anyway, that's the Nile and then the frogs. So let's go with the rest of them. The third plague, the third in these first sequence of plagues is really three triads or three sequences of plagues. 1, 2, and 3, and then 4, 5, and 6, and then 7, 8, and 9. So the third and final in this first sequence are the gnats or mosquitoes or lice or however you want to translate this. And this is one that just happens. You may remember last time I was talking about the structure of the plagues, and in each of these triads, these groups of three plagues, the third one the third and the sixth plague and the ninth plague, they just happen like that. There's no forewarning. They just befall the land. And so Aaron stretches out his staff, and all of a sudden you've got insects, you know, whether they're gnats or lice or mosquitoes or something like that. They're over all the land of Egypt. Now, what's significant here, I think is significant, is the source from which these gnats or mosquitoes or lice come, and they come from the dust. So Aaron is supposed to take his staff, and he's supposed to strike the dust of the earth. And this dust becomes these insects that swarm throughout all the land. And the reason I think that's significant is because if you look through the whole biblical narrative at dust, dust is significant because of its symbolic message of human mortality as well as humiliation. We talk about, you know, we're dust to dust, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. There's a lot of biblical verses that talk about someone being pushed down to the dust or lowered to the dust or falling in the dust. So the dust here is important, is an important part of this plague because it is a symbolic of the humiliation to which Egypt and Pharaoh are being subjected. And then of course the gnats or the mosquitoes or the lice are this irritation on humanity, this reminder of the fact that Pharaoh and the Egyptians are still rebelling against the word of God by not letting the Israelites go.
I know this, if it was in fact lice, and my wife was Pharaoh, that'd be it right there. Those Hebrews would have been let go.
There would never have been 10 plagues, no. Only three.
Three, man. Like, she'd been like, Blood Nile, frogs, maybe we can deal with. As soon as everyone had lice, she'd be like, that's it, we're done.
I know a number of people that if the first plague had been mice, then it would have been all over.
That's it.
Yeah, or cockroaches. Just imagine if the first plague had been cockroaches, that would have been it for most people.
My wife would have been like, the lice would have been too much, but if you really wanted to end it in a hurry, you could just go like, we're going spiders right out of the gate, and it's just over with.
Yeah, you know, you almost can tell that God wanted to draw this out to 10 plagues because he didn't use cockroaches.
Or spiders,
because then we would have had 10 plagues. We would have been all over much sooner, but he didn't. Instead, we have a bloody Nile and frogs hopping all over, and now we have lice. And interesting here, you may remember that the magicians somehow were able to sort of duplicate the first two plagues, but not this one. It says the magicians tried with their secret arts to bring forth gnats, but they couldn't. And so they had to confess to Pharaoh, this is the finger of God. So even the magicians are giving up and telling Pharaoh, hey, you know what? You might should pay attention to this because, you know, we can't duplicate this. This is obviously some kind of divine power that's bringing this about. But Pharaoh, predictably, his heart was hardened. He wouldn't listen to them, just as the Lord had said. I think it's interesting that when the magicians were able to duplicate the magic arts, Pharaoh listened to them. But now that they can't, he won't listen to them. So it doesn't matter. His heart is going to harden either way. Okay, so this is the first grouping of three: the bloody Nile, the frogs, and now the gnats. And still Pharaoh is not listening. So we're going to start over with the second grouping of three. And the first of these is normally translated as flies. The Hebrew is arov, which is, as best we can tell, is something like it only occurs here, so it's a little bit ambiguous as to what it means, but probably something like mixture, like various kinds of animals. We know that the Greek translation of the Hebrew called the Septuagint, as well as the Jewish, early Jewish scholar, first century Jewish scholar named Philo, they identified this as as some sort of fly, called a dog fly or stable fly. It's a blood sucking fly. And if you've ever been around a blood sucking fly, you know how bad these are. I grew up in Texas, and of course this would have been a different kind of fly, but, we had, if you get close to water, they had blood-sucking flies. We called them white flies. And when they would get on you, or I grew up riding horses a lot. If they'd get on the horses, the horse would go crazy. If you're on foot, you'd go crazy and do anything that you can to get away from them because they bite, they suck your blood, they're painful. And so that, if that's what that is, then that kind of gives you an idea as to what this plague is gonna be like. So it's just like the first of these, God tells Moses to go out, present himself to Pharaoh, to make his demands, and then to warn him that if he doesn't do this, then this is what's going to befall him. And there is one thing about this fourth plague that's different. And this difference is going to extend through the rest of the plagues as well. If you look in verse 23 of chapter 8, it says, God is speaking here. He says, I'm going to put a division between my people and your people. He's talking to Pharaoh. And then he says, tomorrow this sign shall occur. So this is the first time, this didn't affect the first three plagues, but this is the first time that God makes abundantly clear that his plagues are directed not against just kind of the totality of the population, but specifically against the Egyptians and Pharaoh. So for the rest of the plagues, whatever happens, you know, whether it's the boils, or the disease, or the hail, or the darkness, all the rest of them, there's a clear barrier that exists between where the Israelites are predominantly living in Goshen and where the rest of the Egyptians are. So this is kind of a, as you go through the plagues, not only is there an intensification, they get worse as time goes on, but there's also a narrowing where God makes it clearer and clearer that his plagues are directed against the oppressors of his people. So you've got this division that takes place, and it happens. There's these insects all over the place. The land is laid waste. They're in the houses of Pharaoh, the houses of his servants. They're all over the land. And then, just like we've seen before, just like we'll see several times after this, Pharaoh gives in, but only a little. He does this over and over and over. He'll try and let the Israel to get out from underneath the plagues. He'll ask them to pray for him, or he'll ask them to just make it stop. And then he'll make these promises, but they're only halfway promises about letting them actually go to sacrifice. And here he says, go sacrifice to your God within the land. Now, the demand was to let them go 3 days' journey into the wilderness, but Pharaoh's not ready for that. He wants them to sacrifice right where they are. But they say, no, can't do that. We've got to sacrifice away from Egypt. What we sacrifice might be an abomination to the Egyptians. And so we've got to go 3 days' journey into the wilderness. And Pharaoh tries to exert his authority here by saying, okay, I'll let you go, but you can't go that far away. And by the way, pray for me. So he's still trying to maintain his control over the situation and demonstrate that he is the one who's ultimately needing to make this decision instead of simply submitting to the will of God. So Moses goes out. He prays for the removal of the insects, and that's what happened. God takes away the swarms of the insects from Pharaoh and his servants, or from all the people. Not one remained. And then we hear what we've heard before, what we'll hear again. But Pharaoh hardened his heart this time also, and he didn't let the people go. So there's plague number four. He's still not giving in.
Yeah.
You think plague five is going to do it?
I don't think it is. don't think so. It is interesting, you know, here you have the Pharaoh hardening his heart, and you have, you know, before this, I mean, God said this would happen, right? But God said, you know, I will harden his heart. And this is a big theological point where, like, somehow there's this dance that happens with Pharaoh and God, where Pharaoh will harden his heart, and the text will say that Pharaoh did it, that Pharaoh hardened his heart, and then you'll have eventually, you know, in other places at the beginning and then at the end, sort of bookend, you have God, like, God hardening his heart, and so there'll be, like, so sometimes you'll have this controversy depending on what theological stream you're in about, you know, well, so did God harden Pharaoh's heart? or did Pharaoh harden his heart? Like how does this work, right? And I think right, the answer is right. Sort of just yes.
Yeah, if you look at the whole sequence of how the plagues are laid out with regard to the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, there's a almost equal balance between the number of occasions when it says that Pharaoh hardened his heart and the number of times when it says that God hardened his heart. And I believe the way the sequence it works is like for the first half, it says Pharaoh hardened his heart. And then the second half, that God hardened Pharaoh's heart. So you got to keep both of these realities in mind here. Pharaoh hardened his own heart and God hardened his heart, because as Pharaoh does nothing on his own. We got to keep that in mind. There is in him, we live and move and have our, in God, we live and move and have our being. So he is compelling everything that happens, except in Pharaoh's case, as God compels him, as God propels him forward, Pharaoh is pushing backward. And so there's this compression that's going on. So is God hardening his heart? Yes. Is Pharaoh hardening his own heart? Yes. Both of these realities are at play. And who's to blame? Pharaoh's to blame, because he hardens his heart. And God hardens his heart because God is the one who continues to push him and to push him in this direction as Pharaoh is pushing and pushing back against him.
Yeah, and this is sort of the danger of hardening your heart, is that, this you have this in the New Testament where it says, hey, don't harden your heart as in the days of Pharaoh, right? Mm-hmm. This is because eventually God might just give you what you want.
Yeah, and that's really what this is, right?
Yeah,
this is God. That's the way that often works. I mean, if God gives you what you want, if you want this life of supposed freedom and independence from his will and his ways, then really what you're getting is captivity. It's a self-devised captivity. And so he is letting Pharaoh have his way, and his way ends up in the hardening of his own heart and, of course, his eventual death and destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always dangerous when God gives you what you want.
Yes,
because what the heart wants is not what God wants. Never make the mistake of assuming that what your heart wants is the barometer of what God's will is for you. Because as Jeremiah says, the heart is deceitful above all things. So the last thing that we should do is trust our heart. It's probably the most untrustworthy thing in the whole universe.
This is true. Amen.
Amen. All right. So hardening of the heart takes place once more. So let's move on. We've got, we're almost halfway through. So plague five is where we are now. And this is a pestilence that moves now toward the livestock of Egypt. So, I mean, there's been irritation. The first one was a huge inconvenience. You do have fish dying in the first one, but the main inconvenience was the fact that you couldn't drink the water. And they got frogs all in your bedroom. And then thirdly, you're eaten up with gnats or lice. And then on top of that, you get flies next that are biting, that are stinging. But the fifth plague takes it up a notch, because here we have a pestilence that befalls the livestock of the Egyptians. Once more, Moses goes out and he makes his demands. He makes his warning that this very severe pestilence is going to fall on the livestock, the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the herds, the flocks. But again, there's going to be a distinction, a division between those of the Israelites and those of the Egyptians. And the same thing befalls them again. The plague comes and, all the livestock of the Israelites were spared. The livestock of the Egyptians were afflicted with the plague. And we read once more at the end of this one, but the heart of Pharaoh was hardened, and he didn't let the people go. This, I think, is interesting because this plague, because it affects the cattle, the living creatures of the Egyptians, demonstrates, if you look at it in a very broad way, the impact that human sin has upon the rest of creation. I mean, we see this already back in Genesis when Adam and Eve's rebellion against God affects not just them as human beings, but now you have thorns and thistles. Now you have the death of animals. Now you have the natural enemies within the created order. So our sin has an effect upon all of creation. It just doesn't just affect me and you. It affects weather. It affects crops. It affects animals. It affects the totality of creation. So sin floods out from the human heart to pollute all of creation. That's why all of creation, that's why our world is so messed up, not just humanity, but our entire world. And so this plague, which is in many ways kind of an intensification of what's wrong with the world, a pointing out of that, is expanding from just the people of Egypt to the animals of Egypt as well. You got to keep in mind as we go through each of these plagues that every single one of them is eschatological. That is, it points toward they are like little movie trailers of the great movie to come at the end of time, because all of these plagues are looking forward to the final collapse of creation before the advent of the Son of God and the recreation of heaven and earth. So you got to look at these plagues in kind of a cosmic perspective, because each of these is an indication of or a window into what's going to happen at the end of time, not only because of destruction, but also because of the recreation that's going to take place when the final Passover happens and those who are covered in the blood of the Lamb are spared, and Christ returns not only to destroy, but also to recreate a new heavens and a new earth. So it's good to look at these plagues, not in historical isolation, but to see them as these theological windows into the broader history of God with the entire world.
Yeah. I mean, the reason things have to be recreated, the reason that there has to be a new heavens and a new earth, the reason all things have to be made new, is not because God somehow didn't do as well as he could have when he first created the earth. Like, it's pretty good, but it's gonna be real, real good when I do it again. Because there's a couple of things now that I'm looking at it that I would have done differently. Yeah, I would do it a little different. And when I get on round two, boy, oh boy. No, it's because it was good and we were good. Everything was good. He called it all good. The problem is it's all corrupted now, and that's our fault. So the earth itself, the very earth itself is corrupted. This is why it's turned on us, and the nature itself takes us out. That's all the manifestation and the effects of sin.
Yeah, sin is always cosmic in scale. It's never simply personal. It's always cosmic, and so if we have eyes to see, we can look around creation every day and really see the preaching of the law. We see how our sin has infiltrated every aspect of creation in one way or another to corrupt it. And then we can also see in that then the great need for this cosmic recreation that's going to take place when Christ comes again. Okay, so that was plague five. Now we got another one coming up here. We got moving on to plague six. And this one is boils on both man and beast. So Moses and Aaron are supposed to go to like a kiln where you would like bake bricks, and they're supposed to take soot from the kiln and take it in front of Pharaoh and throw it up in the air. And this dust from the kiln is going to spread through all the land of Egypt and become boils that breaks out, these sores that are going to break out both on people as well as animals. And that's what they did. They went to Pharaoh, they threw it in the air, and it comes down, it spreads, and now you have boils breaking out on the people. And even the magicians are afflicted with these boils, and so they couldn't appear before Pharaoh anymore because their bodies are oozing with these sores. Now, you would think by now that Pharaoh would be learning his lesson. But if there's anything these plagues tell us, it is the recalcitrant, mulish stubbornness of the human heart. Because once more, even after plague six, Pharaoh's heart was not softened. And it's here we begin to see this transition, because it says, and the Lord, this is verse 12 of chapter 9, and the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not listen to them, just as the Lord had spoken to Moses. So now we have this transition I was talking about earlier, with not Pharaoh hardening his heart, but the Lord hardening Pharaoh's heart.
Dude, boils would be crappy.
Oh, yeah. You know, I think of Job as he sat in the ashes scraping his sores with the potsherd, or poor Lazarus as he sat at the rich man's gate and the dogs would come and lick his sores. Just a disgusting image of what happens to the human body.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, you get this idea that Pharaoh is sitting there on his throne, or whatever the heck it is that he sits on. He's all covered with boils, but he's trying to look royal and telling Moses how, like, he will not let them go. This is not a thing. This is fine.
I can handle these boils.
Yeah, but you know, like, and you're just looking at this. It's like the guy you know is, like, miserable.
Yeah, he's, like, trying not to scratch him while Moses is
yeah, dude.
There.
Oh, man. It's fine. It's fine. Is this all you got? Yeah. Oh, man. Like, that. Like, there's so much. When you're covered in boils and you're just like, no, there's so much pride and defiance involved in that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's why these plagues are such a clear insight into the human heart, because it, instead of softening, it hardens even more. So is kind of all of sinful humanity reduced down to one man. He is the representative sinner here, in that his hardening, repeated hardening of his heart more and more, is indicative of just how far humanity has fallen from God's will and God's ways.
Yeah.
All right. Plague seven. We're not done yet. Now we're gonna start our third and final sequence of three. We had 4, 5, 6, and now we're gonna have the third group of three. We're gonna begin with the bad stuff falling from heaven, the hail. And just like with number one, just like with number four, so now with number seven, the first in this sequence, Moses getting up early in the morning, presenting himself to Pharaoh, making his demands. Now, this one is a little bit different, because this is a much longer introduction to what's about to happen. Moses goes into great detail about why this is happening and its intended effect. Let me give you a sample of what I mean. In verse 14 of chapter 9, he says, "For this time I will send all my plagues on you and your servants and your people, so that you may know that there is no one like me in all the earth." So if Pharaoh had not got it by now, he should be getting it, because Moses is making it abundantly clear that things are about to get even worse. God is upping the ante. And the message he wants to send is that every single one of these plagues that have come is an indication of the incompetence of the Egyptian deities. It's a slap in the face, as I said earlier, to the whole Egyptian pantheon, to show that, in fact, They are not gods. They are nothing more than empty names into which the Egyptians have poured divine qualities. And so what he wants the Egyptians to know is that he is the only God, and that all of their gods are nothing more than vanities. And then he goes on to say something else very significant. He says, "For this cause I have allowed you," he's talking to Pharaoh, "allowed you to remain in order to show you my power and in order to proclaim my name through all the earth." That's very significant. It doesn't say to proclaim my name through all of Egypt, but to proclaim my name through all the earth. This is a very important verse in this whole plague narrative, chapter 9, verse 16, because it indicates what we've been talking about in the last few minutes, that the message of these plagues is not restricted to a single nation in a single historic occurrence. The message of these plagues is intended for the whole world for all time. That's why they're so important. That's why the Egyptians are told in a few more verses, I think it's the next plague, to tell their children and their grandchildren about these, because these narratives are to be passed down from generation to generation as the stories that illustrate in graphic form the power of God and his grace toward his people. So we know, for instance, that these became part of the hymns of Israel. Psalm 78 and 105, for instance, recount the plagues. They only have seven of them. They only recount seven of them. But part of the way that the memory of the plagues was kept alive was not only through the reading of Exodus, but also through the singing about the Exodus. So the poetry of Israel, the hymns of Israel, were another way in which these plagues were remembered, so that later generations would understand that they are part of the story, and that these stories are indicative or illustrative of the power of God, of the grace of God, of the exclusivity of Yahweh, that he and he alone is the one God throughout all the earth. So it's the hail that is going to happen here. And it was the kind of hail that is going to bring about total destruction. And we're not talking about a roof here or there that is damaged, but instead the whole land is rocked by this hail, so that the animals that were left outside were killed. The trees were stripped of all their leaves. The crops that were in the fields were destroyed. There was thunder, there were lightning flashes, and this severe hail that fell everywhere in the land of Egypt, except in the land of Goshen, where, of course, the Israelites were.
It might not seem like this huge deal. I've only been in, I was in one really, really bad hailstorm, where it was like crazy amounts of hail, and big hail. And, I mean, and it like just was, it destroyed everything. It was car windshields gone, all gone. Yeah, you couldn't go outside in it. I mean, it would have just pummeled
you. It would have killed you, probably.
Yeah. And that's just like a regular, it's a bad hailstorm, but it's not a plague. Like, I don't know what the size of this hail is going on, but this particular hail was fairly big, but it was about golf ball sized hail, and just getting dumped like crazy. And you can't do anything. Like, depending on how long this goes on, like, you can't go outside. Everything gets destroyed, and it's also when stuff like that starts falling out of the sky, there is this sense in which, bugs and boils and things like that. Maybe you could somehow get it in your mind where a guy can somehow manufacture that. Like, he's like released lice on us, or like released some kind of disease on us, and we're getting boils. It's pretty hard to manufacture like crazy hailstorm.
Yeah, you can't just pull that one off by magic.
No.
Yeah, we had a hailstorm that hit San Antonio a few months ago, and I had some people describe their neighborhoods to me as a war zone.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was a tremendous loss of property, roofs, windshields, windows in homes, trees. It was an amazing and scary sight to see what kind of destruction was falling from the sky. And that's what happens in Egypt, and on an even greater scale than what any of us have seen. And yet, once more, Pharaoh hardened his heart, and he did not let the sons of Israel go. So we got a couple more. We got a couple minutes, so I think we can work our way through at least the ninth plague here. We're almost to that stopping point. The eighth plague are the locusts. And I was looking at some statistics here. This is pretty amazing. One scholar says that, if I can find it here, 1 square kilometer, try to wrap your mind around this. 1 square kilometer can contain 50 million locusts. And in a single night, they can devour as much as 100,000 tons of vegetation. I mean, this is documented stuff because these locusts still do plague parts of the world. And the devastation that they leave behind is just mind-boggling because they leave nothing green. They destroy, they devour everything. And that's what happens here with the eighth plague. In fact, it's so bad that Pharaoh's servants are begging him to just let the Israelites go. They're like, how long will Moses be a snare to us? Let him go. Let him serve their God. And Pharaoh almost agrees, except he only wants the men of the Israelites to go and worship and to leave the women and the children behind as the means whereby the men are to be brought back. They're like they're held in bondage so that the men will return. And of course, Moses says no, God says no, and so the plague continues until finally Pharaoh begs that they stop, that God take away the insects, and he does. And interestingly, he drives all the locusts, get this, he drives them by a west wind into the Red Sea, where they're all drowned, which of course is a foreshadowing of exactly what's going to happen to Pharaoh and his Egyptians in a couple more chapters. And then let's just wrap up with our ninth plague. This is 3 days of darkness, a darkness that is tangible. It's described as a darkness which may be felt. You know, we talk about fog so thick you could cut it with a knife. This was darkness so thick that you could cut it, that you could feel it, that just kind of enveloped you and pressed against you, a dark and thick, a thick darkness that lasted for 3 days over the land of Egypt. And just to kind of wrap this up now with a thought that kind of puts this in a more positive direction. This ninth plague, which precedes the death of the firstborn, is a picture of the 3 hours of darkness. These 3 days of darkness is a picture of the 3 hours of darkness that's going to befall the world at the death of the firstborn son of the father. Except there, things are going to be very different. Because in that plague, in that ninth and tenth plague, which befalls the son of God, then that brings about ultimate redemption, not only for us, but for all humanity and for the whole world. And so things are reversed from what you see here happening in Egypt.
Yeah, man. And that's it. We are, we're out of time, but we're right up on that 10th plague. I think anyone who's went to Sunday school ever in their life knows that that's the last one, and tons and tons to say about it. So we dare not go there until next week, but we'll have a lot to say about this 10th plague, which is going to be the final straw that broke the Pharaoh's back. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. It was a plaguey episode. I know it was very uplifting, but you know, hang in there. There's good stuff going on next week. We're going to see how it is that God does finally deliver and redeem his people. And there's just tons and tons of Christological stuff going on. So thanks for hanging out, and we will see you next week.